8 o'clock Sunday morning, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, flagship station of the still 2018 Western Conference champion Vegas Golden Knights. We are streaming on the LV Sports Network. If you're listening for the first time, this is Out of Line, and we're right here every Sunday morning at 8, coming to you live from the Fox Sports Cardinal Financial Studio in Las Vegas. I'm Brian Feldman, and today I'm joined in studio by my good friend and sports radio personality, Chris Wynn, and a guy who's almost always here, Chris Magnum Chapman, producer, Lotus Broadcasting sports personality, and Vegas Golden Knights radio, I'd say locker room correspondent. I like calling you that. You like being called the locker room correspondent?
Yeah, it's cool. Correspondent makes me sound like I have an official title.
Well, yeah, it's better than like last week. You didn't like being called infamous. So
no, correspondent's cool. It makes me sound like I work for like CNN or something.
All right, there you go.
Well, like a legit news organization like CNN or NBC.
See, there you go. Listen, you can follow the show on Twitter at Out of Line 1340 AM and like the show on Facebook. That's Out of Line, OUTTALINE. And if you are brave enough and want to see what we look like this morning, I sure wouldn't. You can check us out on Facebook Live. Check out our pages. And we're doing that right now, as a matter of fact. In theory, the show is interactive. So if you have something to add, the Fox Sports Cardo Financial Studio line is 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
Yeah, What's on Tap is sponsored by the Cardinal Financial Company, the first and only choice when looking for answers about home financing. Check out cardinalfinancial.com. On Tap, the Run Rebels have lost their last two games. And if you haven't been paying attention, the most of the people in Vegas, including most UNLV students, haven't been paying attention, so they might not know what's going on with this team. But you'll hear from a guy most people, including me, think should be the starting point guard. And it's not the guy from Las Vegas. Maybe a guy from Detroit, Michigan. You'll hear about that in a minute. Listen, the Las Vegas Golden Knights winning streak did come to an end yesterday. The Vegas Golden Knights host of the Insider Show and host of the Vegas Golden Knights Game Day Radio, Frank Harnish, will join for this week's nightcap. And for the first time ever in Out of Line history, Blazin has gone back to back. The same person is Blazin in 2 weeks, and a team that I absolutely hate. But man, you cannot take away what this guy did. Immediately after this show, the four universities that will compete for the FBS National Championship will be announced right 9 o'clock this morning, I guess when Kareem Hunt gets off the air. Emily Van Buskirk, the lead college football and basketball writer for Yardbarker, will be joining with her selections, and hers will probably be the same ones you hear at 9 o'clock in the morning. And it's week 13 in the NFL. We'll break it down and hopefully recover from the first time ever no one on this show had a winner last Sunday. That's never happened, and this is our third season doing that. What's on Tap does come your way thanks to our title sponsor, the Cardinal Financial Company, the first and only choice when looking for answers about home financing. Again, check out cardinalfinancial.com. Guys, UNLV, you didn't go last night, Chris, but you went 2 games ago. First of all, man, good to see you on the show. I haven't had you on in a while.
Yeah, good to see you guys. Always a fun to come in on a Sunday and chat about what went down over the weekend. And certainly, we have a plethora of stuff we can talk about, Mags and Brian, without question, right?
Yeah, no question. I mean, there's so much right now on the tail with what's going on. Like I said, 9 o'clock, the four teams will be announced. I'm pretty sure we've all got the four teams correct. We'll talk about that in a little bit. We have Emily on. But I want to get to this UNLV team. Man, it's frustrating. It really is. Yesterday, yes, they played. They came out and actually had a different strategy in the second half than the first half. I called it Marvin Mendy's attention. I'm like, man, that is the best second half. Even though you lost, it's the best second half of basketball. They actually coached in the second half, and they played decently. But overall, man, I'm tired of it. Chris, going to these press conferences, and I don't want to bag on anybody, and I like Marvin Menzies, but some of the answers have me scratching my head. I mean, I asked him about Amari Hardy. I did, and I said, you know, as strategically as I can to say, look, you got to get Noah Rabatham off the floor. I mean, this guy really is hurting this basketball team. We're watching this guy, no points deep into the second half again. I mean, that just can't happen. It's your point guard.
Well, I don't think Robotham finished with any points, right? He had 0 points, one rebound, I think one assist. But Menzies said he made some good defensive plays. He made some, created some jump ball situations, took a foul.
So he hustles. Everybody hustles.
Well, that was pretty much what Menzies said, right? He said he likes Hardy off the bench.
Yeah, he likes Hardy coming off. Let's take 22. What did the guy have?
I think he had 22
points, 22 or 23 points. Let's bring him off the bench on a team that is desperate to win with a coach that has a mission that if he doesn't accomplish it, he's going to be fired. And you want him coming off of the bench, and you want this kid on the floor that really, you know what it is if you look, and I'll tell you what it is, Chris, everywhere you look, guys, on all the media guides, what do you see? You see Norm Robotham. So Menzies is trying to make it out. He made this guy out to be the next great point guard here. He brought him to the Mountain West Conference Day. He was one of the guys that sat at the table, right? He is absolutely sold on this kid, and it's like he's not going to give up on him. Menzies being pig-headed, right?
Well, I mean, he clearly likes Robotham starting over Hardy. I think a lot of people, and I'm not going to claim that I'm any genius here, but I know a lot of people locally in the media who feel that Hardy should be starting over Robotham.
Can I raise my hand? Look, you see him face?
No, and
you see, yeah.
I mean, to me, when I watch this team, the best lineup he has on the floor is Justin and Backe Jiang, Joel and Tomway, Hardy, and Clyburn. That looks like the best five on the team.
You wouldn't put Bryce Hamilton in there as one of the starters? Mags, are you kidding me? The
you know what? I you're right.
God almighty. Energy.
You know what, though? I kind of like Bryce coming off as the sixth man. I'll be honest. Because you need a spark off the bench. I think Bryce Hamilton can give that to you.
I think Ntombwe you bring off the bench.
I like Ntombwe's energy.
Me too. But I think Hamilton brings more.
I you could be right. You know, I think those two were both interchangeable because I'm okay with Hamilton getting the start. I really like what Ntombwe brings. I think, you know, from what
Chewy?
I do like him, yeah.
Yeah, I like him
from what I've seen, Chris Clyburn seems to be an improved player from last year. He seems to have a little more consistency than he did last year. And I think Chris Clyburn really wants to win. Like you could see, he really wants to win. And I think with Robotham, I don't know what it is. I mean, Menzies tells you it's a shame because he can shoot the ball in practice. Well, that's practice, man. You got to translate it to the games. And I mean, I'm not going to rail on a kid. I never will. I can't stand when guys do that. But that doesn't change the fact that I don't think Robotham should be starting.
Yeah, and it's not, you know, honestly, it's not railing on the kid. You're being honest. I mean, nothing is ever personal. When we you know, if we're talking about Marvin Menzies, I mean, you know, I've heard a bunch of different, we've heard all the different names, the terms. He's a car salesman, whatever. The guy's a nice guy. It's never a personal issue. The bottom line is this team and some of the decisions that are made are head-scratching. And when you see a guy like Amari Hardy have a career night, and then you ask Menzies said himself, I'm going to constantly keep rotating this lineup, and we're going to find the top five guys. So I asked him at the press conference, hey, man, you said the competition is open for starters for floor time. So a 22-point performance by Amari Hardy against the best defense you're going to see all season, doesn't that warrant you starting to think Hardy should be the star? No, I like him coming off the bench. No, let's start a guy that doesn't score a damn point in the game at point guard and bring a guy that scores 22 off the bench. I'm sorry.
I'm all right with the point guard not scoring a lot.
What
concerns me is the point guard not having any assists.
Yeah.
Because I'm a traditionalist in that I want my point guard to distribute the ball and other guys to score.
Chris, there's two guys on this team right now there's two guys on this team right now that can take the ball to the hole, that can finish, and that's Amari Hardy and Bryce Hamilton. I haven't seen him. Now, Zhang is the most improved player on this team without question.
Yeah.
He has morphed into a Division I college basketball player. and his energy is there. He's got the length, and I like him a lot. Juston, you know, we're all wondering what's happened to Shakur Juston. Nothing's really happened to him. Statistically, he's still there. It's much more quiet.
Well, last night was probably his worst game.
His worst game.
Yeah.
But the whole thing is what it is last year he had Brandon McCoy, a guy that did end up being a first-round draft pick, Chris. He did. And yet, when the ball went down low to Juston, you couldn't leave McCoy alone. Now McCoy's not there. Teams aren't as concerned with Mbaké Jiang as they were with Brandon McCoy. And I think that has hurt Shakur Juston a bit.
I don't think there's any doubt this is a completely different animal than 2017, 2018 with this Rebel team. You can't even make the comparison, Brian. Look, in regards to Marvin Menzies and how he handles his players and his approach to certain guys. We saw this last year, didn't we, Brian and Mags? In regards to Chris Clyburn, you mentioned that he's been playing better this year, but last year was a complete disaster for Clyburn, and it seemed like Marvin Menzies just wanted to force him down the Rebel fans' throat, and he was determined to get him on the court at every given instance that he wanted him out there. That is kind of what I think he's doing with Noah this year. It's exactly the same thing. And look, you brought up the media guide and with Noah being on the cover of it. Let me tell you something. If coaches are making decisions based on who's on the front cover of the media guide, then they are not for long for the coaching business. So, it's going to wash out in the end. We're going to know. If Amari Hardy is the best guy to have on the floor for this team to win, then Amari Hardy is going to be the guy eventually. We're still early on in the season. Maybe there's that element of Marvin Menzies and his staff trying to figure out who he wants on the floor. But it's been evidently clear that it is not working out ideally right now. And there might need to make some changes going forward.
Well, here's the reality of the situation. The reality of the situation is you're now what, 4-3 on the season? You are in a point now where the season has a real opportunity to get away from you because your next game is on the road in Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Then you come home and you play BYU, who's a perennial tournament team every single year out of the West Coast Conference. Then you go to Hawaii. You're playing a true road game at Hawaii, who is not a bad team. Then you're playing someone else in Hawaii, and you're playing another game in Hawaii. There's a real chance that you may only win one or two of the remaining out-of-conference games before you open up your conference season. And I don't think I'm being unrealistic here when I say they're probably not going to win a lot of road games in the conference.
Chris, I said earlier in the year, I was saying they win 13 games. I backed it down to 12, and now I'm down to 11, and I might be stretching at that. I'm going to leave it at this, and we'll get out of UNLV basketball talk. There's a tough road to haul in front of them. Excuse an old cliche, but there is. And it's scary when you see some of the games they've played and the way they've played and how unorganized they have looked at times. We see guys literally that cannot drive a basketball down the lane with a few people there. And in D1, it's unacceptable. And not being able to finish layups. How many high-percentage shots have I watched this team literally miss in the last four games? It's disgusting. And again, I'll leave it at this. Georgi Slavochinin had as many points as Noah Robotham yesterday. It's that simple. Maybe
Woodbury didn't even play.
Maybe Noah. Yeah, but Woodbury is not the prized possession of Marvin Menzies.
No.
Noah should have a seat next to Georgi Slavochinin and should get a good view of the game. Listen.
Hey, you know what? And just to point out, Mick Cronin yesterday, there was a kid, Broom, for Cincinnati.
Great call. Yeah,
right?
I know where you're going.
The kid made a terrible mistake.
A turnover.
He may have been their best player yesterday.
Immediately Broom. Yanked.
No hesitation.
Immediately.
He pulled that kid. He was on the bench, and the assistant coach was in his ear. Broom comes back in. He was the best player of the rest of the game for Cincinnati.
He really was. He was very, you know, Mick Cronin, not the same type of coach, a little bit different than a guy like Paul Weir at New Mexico. Yeah. But Numira, we watched him last year. He'd walk past the player. You're terrible.
Yeah.
And I mean, you could just see it. The guy would go back in the game and just be lit on fire. Menzies,
I got to ask you, though, because you said 11 wins.
Yeah.
If they win 11 wins, is he back next year?
Brother, if they win 15 games, he's not back next year. No. Unless those 15 wins come in the Mountain West Conference tournament that get him to the NCAA tournament.
But you think
if he gets to the NCAA tournament by somehow miraculously winning the Mountain West Conference tournament, yes, he'll have his job. In my opinion, and I've said it and I'll live with it here, the bottom line is Desiree Reed-Francois cannot touch Tony Sanchez, and she already made her claim. He's back next year. She pretty much said he's got to make a bowl game. She has got to have a scapegoat for UNLV. I mean, it is a tombstone, a graveyard at the Thomas and Mack Center. It's unexcusable.
Well, and
he is going to be the scapegoat. Marvin Menzies, he'll never be fired midseason. And all those morons out there that think Menzies will be fired, remember what happened with Rice a couple of years ago. They won't make that mistake again. But the minute the season ends, I don't think there'll be any hesitation. 12, 13 wins, the day after it ends, gone and start your pursuit for the new coach.
And
I know you have a prediction for a new coach.
I'm not going to go there.
I knew you weren't going to go there, but you said it yesterday at the game.
I have an idea what the game plan would be in this situation. But I don't want to. You know, I want to have faith that Menzies gets the job done, and I hope that he does get the job done because I'm an alum, and I don't want to see my basketball program win 11, 13 games. I want to see my basketball program in the NCAA tournament, and I hope Menzies gets the job done.
I'm not going to disagree with you at all. Like I said, personally, I like the guy. I don't wish ill will on anyone. I just want to see a good product on the floor. UNLV was at one time a great brand. It is not anymore, and it shouldn't be referred to as one anymore, because it is not. It has disappeared. When you see the Thomas and Mack, the way I've seen it,
it's a ghost town.
I am repulsed at students that get free tickets. You can't even entice them with free T-shirts. You're going to give me free laundry when I'm in college? I'm coming to the game. But it didn't matter when Michigan State was terrible. Every game, Jennison Fieldhouse and then the Breslin Center, packed every game. The Spartan Stadium, packed every game. You go to these things, man.
It's part of the college experience.
100%. Especially here, they're free tickets to you, students. I'm disgusted. Listen, we got to take a break. On the other side, Frank Harnish in studio. Don't want to keep him hanging anymore. We got Nightcap, Golden Knights off their 5-game winning streak. Lost yesterday. But are we seeing this team turn around? We're going to find out about that right when we come back.
Here's a one-on-one at the other end. Drew McNabb, a drop, score! All by himself, Connor McDavid. 1-0 Edmonton. Chris Marsh is up the left wing, peels off left circle, looks in front, feeding Smith safe, rebound, score! William Karlsson, and the Knights tie it 1-1. So we can center. Here's a puck in front, they score! Ryan Spooner! Ty Ratty out of the corner, got it to Spooner. It's his first point with the Oilers.
Hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
5-game winning streak after, it seems like... And joining us now, Frank Harnish, host of the Vegas Insider every day right here on Fox, and also a game day host. You can hear him pregame, in-game, in between every period and after the game as well. Joining me, Chris Wynn, Chris Magnum Chapman here with Behind the Wheels of Steel. But, Frank, it seems like in that Calgary game when they got way down, and it was 7-0, and it was gross. In the third period, the Knights scored 2 late goals, didn't even make the game respectable, but it seemed like that might have been a turning point in this season.
Well, the reason that was a turning point was because they were embarrassed by the game. And there was a lot of players questioned after the game about should they just take that film and throw it away. And I know Nick Holden and Jonathan Marchessault were two of the players that said, no, we need to watch that game. We don't have to watch it intensively, but we have to watch it and we have to remember it so it never happens again. Calgary earlier this year had a game where they got blown out in a game. They came back and were 9-1 after the game that they got blown out. A game like that, what they say is, yes, these things do happen, and it'll happen again sometime in their history. Hopefully not this year. But the thing is, it's not what happens in a game like that. It's how you bounce back from it. And they had a nice bounce back.
Oh, a great bounce back. And then a couple days later, not within a week, they shut out the same Flames, followed by another shutout, a big shutout, against the divisional leader at that time, the San Jose Sharks. Back-to-back shutouts for Marc-Andre Fleury. He kind of took that 7-0 loss personally as well, even though I don't think he was in net for that game. He still took it personally, and wow, to see that Flower still playing the way he's playing this year. He's kind of exceeding my expectations, and I imagine everyone else that knows anything about hockey.
Well, Marc-Andre Fleury had arguably his best year ever last season. Statistically, it was his best year. He signed a big new contract, and some people were questioning, well, did he deserve $7 million a year? Well, he's trying to earn that contract. He's trying to prove that he did earn it. And Marc-Andre Fleury is the leader of this team. Everybody in that locker room will tell you that. There's other guys that will take it personally. They'll be willing to stand up, but Marc-Andre Fleury is the guy that they all look to. You look at the game, even in Chicago, when, okay, they win the game and they blow the Blackhawks off the ice. But everybody, from Gerard Gallant to the players in the locker room to Alex Tuck and everybody else, said that game could have been 3-3 after the first instead of 3-0. Marc-Andre Fleury is the leader. And sometimes a goaltender in this day and age where there's so much parity in the league, it's one big save that he makes that picks up the team that allows them to win games. And that's what Flower's been doing. You give a chance, your team a chance to win, and if they're good enough, they come back and they win games.
So, Frank, the next matchup, of course, they take on the Oilers. A lot of times, it's not necessarily how well the Golden Knights or how rough things are going for the Golden Knights. Sometimes you just run into a hot goaltender, right? And that might have been the case when they took on Edmonton.
Well, it's not only the fact that you come into a hot goaltender, but there's a whole new attitude up in Edmonton. Remember, Vegas had just played Edmonton and beaten them 6-3. They kind of embarrassed them. Excuse me. And Connor McDavid is the best offensive player on the planet.
No question.
Maybe the best player on the planet. That's arguable. He still doesn't play a full 200-foot game. But in this day and age with so much parity, one mistake can cost you. Ken Hitchcock has talked about it since he's been there. Edmonton now has a more defensive-oriented mindset. That is something that Todd McClellan did not have up there, that the Oilers didn't have before. Cody Eakin, who has been exceptional on that second line, who has been the best line for this team, make no mistake about it, the last few games. Cody Eakin had a bad turnover. Alex Tuck didn't see Spooner coming down the middle because he wasn't anticipating the turnover. Spooner scores his second goal of the season. As you heard in the call there, Dan Duva said, his first point for Edmonton. It's a fourth-line player. Not a guy that you're expecting to beat you. Connor McDavid had the first goal. It was a beautiful goal. You expect Connor McDavid to do stuff. When you get contributions from your third and fourth line in this league,
we know that very well.
That is huge.
Don't we know that very well in Vegas?
I mean, the demolition crew, as Dan Duva calls him,
no
Belmare,
question.
Reeves, and Carrier have been spectacular.
But a huge key, though, was the Golden Knights defensively were able to tighten things up. We saw Alex Tuck was a huge part of that when he had the nice play as well, too. So, look, this is one of those games where, you know, you just have those, you know, one or two big mistakes, and it can cost you in a tight, you know, 2-1, well, 1-0 type of game like that.
One thing I will say is also take into account Koskinen, Mikko Koskinen, starting in goal for Edmonton. I think all six games at home, he hasn't lost a game yet. Is that right?
I think he's like 7-1-1. He's been incredible. He's 6'7". And the
covers
thing about
the entire
it was,
net, huge
remember,
guy.
McClellan, his guy was Cam Talbot.
Mm-hmm.
Ken Hitchcock comes into town. There's a new sheriff in town. And his philosophy is whoever earns the playing time is going to get to play. He puts this kid in. He's making the most of it. Kind of sounds like the Vegas Golden Knights last year, doesn't it? Get an opportunity, make the most of it. And all of a sudden, you're wondering what's going on with Cam Talbot. I've questioned Cam Talbot and how good he is the last 3 years or so. He signed a nice new contract. When he's good, he's very good. But like a lot of goaltenders in this league, when he gets a little bit of doubt in his mind,
he
give up
off.
One or two, and all of a sudden, if you're not 100% mentally ready to play in this league and you're a goaltender, you are going to get lit up. And that's exactly what's happened to Cam Talbot. Koskinen comes in. He takes the opportunity. He's making the most of it. And again, he's not necessarily the most aesthetically pleasing goaltender. You maybe wouldn't want to make a clinic of him how to be a goaltender. But one thing that helps is when you're 6'7", you stop some shots just because you're so darn big.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You're going to be a little bit awkward when you're that big playing in the net. And that's the whole thing with the sport of hockey. Unlike any other sport out there, we've seen this time and time again, especially in the postseason, when a guy like Jonathan Quick can absolutely become a wall and you can take a team all the way to the promised land. Fleury last year, there is no question, without Marc-Andre Fleury, this team does not get to the Stanley Cup final. And I said it many times last year. A goaltender changes the dynamic of your team. And Marc-Andre Fleury is one of those guys capable of doing that. When you've got a 6'7" goaltender like they have in Edmonton right now, a guy like that, like you said, by accident, you're going to make 7 or 8 saves. And he made 31 of 32. The Golden Knights did their job. What I like right now about the Golden Knights, Frank, is now we're seeing all these shots start to be rewarded. Yesterday wasn't indicative of that, but the 5-game winning streak, we saw that the puck's going to go in the net, and it's always a thing in hockey. We know this being from areas where hockey is big. Shoot, shoot, shoot. It's not like basketball, get a high percentage shot. It's just shoot the puck at the net.
Well, and we also know, too, how important a goaltender can be. And the interesting thing about the goaltender position, besides the fact that it's a mental, it's a very mental position, a lot of things in sports are. Confidence takes you a long way. If you start lacking it, all of a sudden you start really faltering. Antti Niemi for the Blackhawks won a Stanley Cup. This guy is having a hard time finding a job these days. Yeah. Scott Darling was the reason that the Blackhawks won their second cup when Corey Crawford was a starting goaltender because of what he did against Nashville. He just got put on waivers because they found that he's not a starting goaltender. You as a Detroit Red Wing fan know several teams that had great teams and they didn't have the best goaltending. Today you have to have great goaltending. But there's also that fine line with a goaltender. You want them to be ready for the playoffs and you don't want them burnt out by the playoffs. Yeah. We saw that last year with some of the teams. Vasilevskiy, Pekka-Rinne, these guys are phenomenal goaltenders. But in the playoffs, they kind of faltered a little bit. Maybe they played too much. And that is the one concern right now with the Vegas Golden Knights in some people's mind. Is Marc-Andre Fleury playing too many games?
And is Malcolm Subban not playing enough games? Because I start to wonder about, I think Malcolm Subban, and I get this a lot. A lot of times I get asked questions, being what we're doing, about Malcolm Subban. And, you know, I think it's a rhythm thing. And I think when you get in net, all of a sudden one game, you got to play a lot, and I wonder where his mentality at, because Marc-Andre Fleury may play for 3 more years.
Well, I mean, he's got a contract for it that says he will play for 3 more years. One of the hard things with Malcolm Subban, like any goaltender, you want playing time. That's why Marc-Andre Fleury wants to play every game. Dave Pryor and Gerard Gallant are going to have to tell him, look, you're sitting out tonight, if they're going to bench him. Because he's never going to say, yeah, take me out of the game. Remember, he always sat out one of the games at a back-to-back. Yeah. He didn't do that the last time. You mentioned it. He had the back-to-back shutouts there because he's playing so darn well right now, and every point is so crucial. You can go from the bottom of the division to the top with a couple-game winning streak. Arizona and Edmonton have won 3 in a row now. They're right behind the Vegas Golden Knights now. San Jose has been on top. They've been down. You mentioned the fact when they beat San Jose, they're the first-place team. They actually beat 2 first-place teams. Because Calgary was in first when they beat them. By beating them, San Jose won that night, so San Jose jumped into first, and then they played the first-place team 2 nights in a row, so they actually won both of them. There's a lot of parity in this league, and it's very difficult, and every point truly is important, even at this time of the year. The old adage is, nobody wins the Stanley Cup at this time of the season, but you can knock yourself out of contention for it. That's why they need every point like that. Malcolm Subban is very talented, but it's hard to stay sharp when you can't play. And remember last year with the Nashville Predators, when UC Saros, when they had that bye week, they could send him down to the minors. He played 2 games when nobody else could even hit the ice because he was allowed to go down there. You can't do that with Malcolm Subban because you run the risk of him getting claimed off waivers.
Frank, this is you talk about old adages. You saw finally William Karlsson scored once again. It's his second in the second period, marked his 4th straight game where he had a point. We always say, you know, so a team goes, so a player goes. How important is it that they get William Karlsson right from an offensive standpoint for this team moving forward and being able to light the lamp?
Well, it's not just the fact that they get William Karlsson right. It's that they get the first line right. The top line hasn't been producing like we saw them do last year. And the thing about it is it's not only the fact that they're not scoring goals, which obviously you have to do, but they're plus minus. Those 3 guys completely ran roughshod over the entire NHL last year. They're not doing that this year. They had a game recently where 2 of the players were -3 and the other one was -2.
Yeah.
That never happened last year. I mean, I don't know if it happened once in a game last year. The line has to get going. The second line you're getting production from. The 4th line occasionally you're getting production from. And the 3rd line basically isn't hurting you anymore. Earlier it was.
It was.
I'm not sure what's going to happen when Stastny and Holla come back. We don't know when they're coming back. But they've got to get production out of that top line. And I know there's been some people saying, well, they need to break up the top line. Well, then you mix up the chemistry or something on the 2nd line or where you're going to move guys around. And the other thing, too, is Maybe the reason that the second line is producing so well right now is because the other team still has to go against the top line. Would the second line be doing that good if the best defensive players from the other team were out there against them? These are things we don't know. Gerard Gallant and his coaching staff know it. They're playing well right now, but they have to keep on playing well. And Washington on Tuesday, well, you know, it's a rematch of the Stanley Cup final. It's going to be a big game. All Washington's done, they've won their last seven in a row.
Yeah, it's going to be that's going to be a really tough one. Then they got the Blackhawks Thursday night. I'm looking forward to both those games. I'll
and
be there
I'm
this
wondering
week.
If maybe the Blackhawk game is where you've tried to slip Malcolm Subban in.
Very well, especially the way they just played, as you said, up in Chicago.
The Blackhawks are a disaster right now. They are playing absolutely horrible. Corey Crawford trying to come off injury. He might have come back a little bit too soon. Cam Ward is a backup goaltender for a reason. He's not a very good goaltender. The Blackhawks have Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, and a bunch of overpaid garbage and guys that belong in the AHL.
You know, I can't. I you see me smile because I can't be sad when the Blackhawks are bad. You know my feeling.
It's tough for me to. I'm not shedding a tear over here either, Brian.
Especially when Frank's got the Bears to lean on right now.
Frank, I like the young coach, though. This Jeremy, this kid, I think he's a solid coach, man.
I don't – they got rid of Joel Quenneville because you can't fire the team. Joel Quenneville was not the problem there in Chicago. And you talk about how times have changed real quick. Who would have thought a few years ago that the two worst teams in the NHL for the plus-minus at minus 26 are the Blackhawks and the L.A. Kings? Those five Stanley Cups that they've gotten recently – mean nothing.
It's amazing.
Now.
The winds of change are incredible. And Frank, I hope you stick around because we'll talk about football a little bit. And, you know, I've been so boisterous about the decision early in the season, before the season started, with Khalil Mack going to the Chicago Bears. I said this guy is going to wreak havoc. I said it changes the Bears' dynamic immediately. Yes, I think Trubisky's going to be a decent quarterback. I said that at the beginning of the season, but I said the game changer is Khalil Mack. He has been nothing but that for the Chicago Bears. What a great pickup for that team. And I am actually happy for him because I think the stupidity of the Oakland Raiders is showing on the field in their record. We're going to watch him get blown out by a Chiefs team without a running back today. Watch it happen. Take the Chiefs and the spread and give the Raiders all the points you want. We're going to come back on the other side. We do got Blazin, Emily Van Buskirk of Yard Barker also to talk about the picks for the national championship run and the playoffs. And that's happening at 9 o'clock. She'll be here as well. And of course, we've got our picks in NFL Week 13 all coming your way in a minute.
This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot. This is why. This is why. This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot.
Blazin, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza. Two happy hours every single day. A Hail Mary pass from Centennial Hills Hospital, and we're there every Monday night. Giving away all kinds of great stuff, wing parties, replica jerseys, mugs, and now lots of Las Vegas show tickets. Come on down tomorrow night. You've got an NFC East battle as the Washington Redskins travel to Philadelphia to play the Eagles. Should be a good game. I hate both teams, but I'll be there, and I'll be eating some free wings, and you can too. So come on down and check it out tomorrow night. I'll tell you what, not much. I can't believe that the first time ever I've had back-to-back Blazin winners. And it's Dwayne Haskins, man. This guy, I, you know, very difficult being the fact that I cannot stand Ohio State. But, I mean, are you kidding me? In the Big Ten championship game, 34 for 41, almost 500 yards, 499 yards passing, five TDs again. The guy has thrown for over 400 yards five times this season. He's got 47 touchdown passes now, and he'll definitely be in New York. Tua's going to win the Heisman Trophy. When a quarterback hardly plays the fourth quarter of any game in a season, he's thrown two passes in the fourth quarter, and one of them was a 23-yard touchdown. He deserves to win it. I think Tyler Murray is without question the best athlete and the best player in the country. But Tua will get it. But I will tell you right now, what Dwayne Haskins has done, especially in the last two games at Ohio State, is Blazin. It's unbelievable, and you got to take your hats off to him. And one other thing that's kind of Blazin is, what is up with bringing back all these old coaches? I mean, you got Mac Brown going back to North Carolina. Let's bring back the glory days of the 80s at North Carolina with Mac Brown. I mean, what is he, 106 now? I mean, you know, it's all right. Kansas picks up Les Miles. I mean, everyone knows they're a basketball school, but, you know, let's grab another old guy. And then wasn't Texas Tech picked up Matt Wells, I think, is going to be their head coach next year. I mean, I guess it's to sell tickets, so it is what it is. But I thought it was kind of Blazin. I couldn't believe Mac Brown. I mean, how's his wife going to let him do that? That guy can his heart hold up through a game? I mean, the guy's 100 years old, man. But Blazing brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 North Durango. Again, we'll be out there tomorrow night. Come on down for Monday Night Football. Joining us right now, she is the lead college football and basketball writer for Yardbarker, also co-host of the national podcast, Sideline Sass, and that is with three S's, so it's A, I was going to call it Sideline Ass, Em, but I didn't want to do that. Great show. You definitely want to check that out. Emily, I know you went to the Pac-12 championship game. Man, I tried to watch a little bit of that, and I'm glad I recorded it because every time I have insomnia, I'm going to put that game on. 13-10, as boring as can be, but that's the Pac-12 this year.
Yeah, you know, it was absolutely the most fitting end to what was a bizarre and unfortunate season in the Pac-12. A 3-0 score at halftime. Unreal. I almost left my stadium. But and then ending it with that pass interference call. That was just the icing on the cake. It was a terrible game, but it's the game that Pac-12 fans deserve. We saw Larry Scott beforehand in a press conference, and he had not a lot to say about the allegations going against him. So I think there's going to be some changes, hopefully, in this offseason, and we'll see a different conference next season, hopefully.
And I'd ask you, a friend of mine, Tim Unglesby, who actually hosts Heatwave Sports here on Fox mm-hmm. Sports Radio, he'll be on tonight. He asked me to ask you a question yesterday. He wanted to know, does the Pac-12, have they thought about maybe playing their championship game here in Vegas? Because I mean, it looked like a UNLV game at Sam Boyd Stadium last night. I couldn't believe how empty the stands were for a Pac-12 championship game.
Yeah, there was actually way more fans at the Cal-Stanford game yesterday than there was at the Pac-12 championship. And I have heard rumors that the championship may move to Vegas. That's definitely a place that they've thought about. But I think what would be better for the conference at this point is playing it at, you know, the school with the best records on their campus, because at this point we're not filling out NFL stadiums, and I think the best chance to regain the trust of the fans is to play it at the school that has the best record, and they should host it, and then everyone else can deal with the travel and do what they need to do. But there does need to be a change, because that Levi's Stadium was the saddest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was bad. Well, I don't want them hosting a game. The reason I don't want the better team hosting a game, because I think that's the Pac-12's way of trying to squeak into the playoffs, because that way they'll get a team that'll win their home game. It'll be like another home game, and I don't think it should ever be a home game. Those games, to me, should always be played on a neutral field, I think, when you're talking about a championship game. But, let's quickly morph over into the FBS. You got the selection show starting. Matter of fact, it's about 10 to 11 minutes away from right now. They're going to pick the four teams. There's no doubt about three of them. Alabama's going to be number one. Clemson's going to be number two. And I believe, even though I don't think Notre Dame should be number three because they don't have any kind of a championship game, they're 11-0. You got to make them number three. Number four to me, I want to say it's going to be Oklahoma. I think they're more deserving. I think they avenged their one loss against Texas in the Big 12 championship game. But for some reason, I got this crawl up my ass that says they want Urban Meyer and Ohio State in there again for money and for namesake. Please tell me that's not going to happen and we're not going to see Ohio State leapfrog Oklahoma.
I don't know. I wish I could tell you that, but at this point, I'm not exactly sure what the committee is going to do, because there are cases that could be made, you know, for both teams. And people are making a hell of a case for Georgia, even though they just lost to Alabama in what was a great game to watch, and two great teams. But I think I agree with you. It should be Oklahoma. I think they played a heck of a game against Texas, and they are the more deserving team. But people love to give Urban Meyer more credit than he deserves.
A 6-6 Purdue team beat the dog pee out of the Buckeyes earlier in the season, okay? That happened, and there's no taking away from it. But somehow, Urban Meyer, that's all brushed under the rug, like a lot of things that Urban Meyer is involved with get brushed under the rug, because he is a winning football coach, and he has a big name, and he's a draw, and he brings in revenue, and he brings in players. But I don't know. I just got this bad gut feeling, but I will go back to what you said. In my opinion, Georgia is the fourth best team in the country. We've been asking all season, can anybody play with Alabama? Georgia proved they can play with Alabama. They damn near beat them again. And, man, I love that kid Fromm. I really do. As a sophomore, I loved him as a freshman. Go ahead, Chris.
Emily, they're not going to be in the Final Four, but there is a sentiment out there. You know there's a feeling around America. I want to get your thoughts. UCF, we all saw what happened. Obviously, Milton went down with the injury. And I think every rational college football fan and expert out there understands that they are not one of the top four teams in the country. But where do you stand on the whole UCF kind of phenomena? And is this maybe just a case to have an eight-team college football playoff?
I think that's a great point, and I love UCF. So I've been on that bandwagon since day one. I think it's hilarious that they proclaim themselves national champions. But to be fair, it is very difficult to win 24 games. It's almost unheard of. Even with a schedule that's not the toughest in the nation. So there needs to be credit given where it's due. Yes, the playoffs needs to expand. Yes, they need to be a part of it. It's just not going to happen. It's not in the cards at this moment. I wish there was more of a discussion about having them in. Losing Mackenzie Milton in that game really hurt them, especially in a national playoff picture, because you know people like to see him play. So maybe had he been in this game, then we would be hearing more about it. But I think they're still going to crown themselves, you know, national champions, and that's, you know, really at the end, that's all that matters.
They would be beaten so badly by Alabama that the local hospital would be loaded with football players when that game ended. God help them if they had to play the Alabama Crimson Tide. Okay, it's time. The spot. Who's the Final Four? Who are we going to see the selection committee put in today?
I mean, I think it goes, you know, like you said, Alabama, Clemson, Notre Dame, and then the fourth one I'm going to go with Oklahoma, because I think
because you want it to be Oklahoma like I do.
I do, and I love Kyler Murray. I think he's such a great player, and I'm about to see him this weekend at the Heisman. I can't wait to ask him some burning Major League Baseball questions, and so I'm pulling for the Sooners. I think the Big 12 needs to be in there. It's time. So.
Yeah, we're going to see Kyler Murray out here in Vegas. He's probably going to live here for a little while he plays for their AAA franchise out here in Las Vegas up in Summerlin, because he has definitely decided to play baseball. She's Emily Van Buskirk, Yard Barker. Check her out. Lead college football and basketball writer. And definitely go on the website and check out Sideline Sass with her and Kaylee. You'll really enjoy it. Em, always a pleasure to have you, hon. And we will be talking before the playoffs begin.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Absolutely. Okay, listen, as we run low on time, we got to talk about NFL Week 13. But, Mags, hit fact this real quick, because we got to have this one here.
Fact this. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact this.
Yeah, it's a fact. In the last 2 days, we've heard quite a bit about domestic violence again in the National Football League. This loss might change the dynamic of the entire season, being that Kareem Hunt was the 2017 rushing leader and up until Friday was the starting running back of the Kansas City Chiefs, one of the teams that with Kareem Hunt had a legitimate shot to contend for the Super Bowl this season. I know it involves money, but how in the hell does TMZ acquire this kind of video footage before law enforcement or the National Football League, Chris?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't have any special knowledge as far as, you know, the inner workings of TMZ and how they're able to acquire this. But the question has been asked, and it's been debated here the last few days, regarding how does the National Football League and the Kansas City Chiefs not be, you know, on the precipice of all this information, given a organization, I guess you could call TMZ a news organization, that is able to acquire this and able to kind of spring this on the American public. That's a question that I think needs to be answered, and I don't think it's been completely done yet. So, this is a absolutely ugly situation from a PR standpoint for the Kansas City Chiefs, and they I think absolutely did the right thing. Was it shocking? Oh, of course it was. You mentioned he's the starting running back of the Chiefs. He was, but he was also the linchpin of if not the premier offense in all of football. So, you know, going forward, obviously it's a question as to whether or not Kareem Hunt will even have a career in the NFL.
Well, that was going to be my next question.
And what team will take a waiver on him when that decision is made?
That was going to be my next question. And Frank, I'll bring you back into the discussion on this, wearing his Bears shirt. Frank, I'm going to mention a couple names to you. Ezekiel Elliott, Joe Mixon, most recently Reuben Foster. They all have jobs. Ray Rice didn't, but he was 29 years old and on the backside of his career. You've got a 23-year-old kid that arguably is the third best running back in the National Football League right now. And he's 23 and he's out at Kansas City. Is this guy going to play in the league again?
I believe he probably will.
Yeah.
Because it's all about money. And you ask about how TMZ can get stuff. If you have access to that video and you're a human being and the authorities say, turn over that video, and somebody else says, here's some money, give us the video, where are most people going to go today? It's all about the Benjamins. That's what people do. If there's money to be made on something and somebody has access to it, if they can get their pockets filled, they're going to try to do something with it. That's the reality of it. Whether you like it or not, I don't like it, but it's the way it is. Maybe if there was criminal charges against somebody for doing something like that, maybe then that would stop it. But as long as they can do it legally, oh yeah, here, take this free or give me some cash, people are going to go for the cash. By the way, if Ohio State does get in, it's your fault. You made Haskins your blazing player two times
God,
in a row.
I know.
If they listen to you on Facebook or out of line, then they're going to go, well, you know what? The thing that tipped it over, you know, that quarterback is blazing. People want to see him.
Oh, so it's
on you. So if they go in, look in the mirror, my friend.
I'm wanting to see Kyler Murray. Listen, we got to fly. I know we got the picks of the week, and I'm going to let you guys jump in as well as our guest pickers of the week. Frank, who do you like this week in the NFL? You got to pick one game against the spread. Who are you taking?
I have absolutely no idea.
You don't got it. I'll give you the payroll. While you're looking at this, when have you looked? You got your pick?
I have looked.
Okay, here you go.
And I'm going to go with the homer pick here, Brian, Frank, and Mags. How about the Detroit Lions covering 10 points at home against the Los Angeles Rams? We understand the Rams, with that offense, is explosive. But we've seen what Detroit has done against quality teams at home. Sometimes they find a way not only to just cover, but to win outright. I'm not saying the Lions are going to win, but I think they're going to cover the 10 points.
Okay. You got one?
Yeah. You know what?
You're going to go with your Bears?
No, I'm not going to go with the Bears because I do not trust them. Chase Daniels has been a backup for his career for a reason because he's a backup quarterback. So I'm going to go with Kansas City because Oakland's garbage.
I can live with that. Mags, who do you got this week, man? You got to recover.
I'm going with the Steelers laying the points at home against the Chargers. I don't trust San Diego on the road. No Melvin Gordon in that game for the Chargers.
Diego?
Yeah, they'll always be San Diego. Pittsburgh, bad loss last week. They bounce back, and they cover today.
Okay, and I'm going to, you know what, believe it or not, the two Detroit boys are sticking together. It is the first time, I think, on this show I have ever picked the Detroit Lions, but minus 10 at home. Please show me a little bit of pride, just a little tiny bit, guys. Out of Lions here every Sunday morning, 8 to 9 a.m., Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 a.m., home of the 2018 reigning Western Conference champion, Golden Knights. I want to thank Frank Harnish, Chris Wynn, Chris Magnum Chapman, and Amari Hardy for doing a one-on-one with me, and of course, Emily Van Buskirk of Yard Barker. We will be back next week, same time, same place. See you then. Bye-bye.